Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Ruby Rogues podcast. This week on our panel, we have Valentino Stoll.
Hey, now.
Darren Bramer.
Hey, everybody.
I'm Charles Maxwood from Top End Devs. This week, we have a special guest, and it's Stefan Weinert. Did I get anywhere close?
Okay. Yeah, it's Stefan Weinert. It's okay.
Weinert. My German is non-existent, so I'm sure I have ancestors that would be chagrined by that. But anyway, do you want to introduce yourself? Let us know why you're famous and all that good stuff.
I'm famous? No, I don't think so. Yeah, my name is Stefan Weinert. I'm from Germany, Frankfurt am Main. Yeah, I'm just a regular full-time Ruby on Rails developer working with the same company for like more than 10 years now. Always with Ruby on Rails. Started with Rails 2.3, actually, and have ever been. Yeah, and yeah, try to be a little public with some small gems and answering Stack Overflows and all this stuff, writing blog articles, which is, I think, how you found me.
Yep. Yeah, we ran across an article where you were talking about some of the changes coming in Rails 7. And so, yeah, you know, we're a little further down the road than we were in July last time we talked about it. It's always fun to kind of get another perspective on it, see what people are doing with it. And we were kind of noodling around before the show, and it looks like they just released a release candidate on December 6th. It's December 9th as we record this. So, yeah, kind of timely stuff. As the leading digital platform for medical professionals, Doximity is transforming the healthcare industry. Founded in 2010, Doximity's mission is to help physicians save time so that they can provide better care for patients. They built secure and modern communication, workflow, and networking tools. Over 1.8 million healthcare professionals, including over 80% of U.S. doctors, rely on Doximity in their day-to-day practice. Their tools are physician-first and patient-centered. Doximity is a remote-first, distributed team, and they take pride in the culture they've built. They recognize that the company is successful when people are successful. They've built a diverse team with an inclusive culture, and they're multicultural, multilingual, and international. Their diversity is their code, too. They build products with Ruby, Rails, Vue.js, and Golang. They'd like you to come join their mission to make every physician more productive so they can provide better care for their patients. Visit workat.doximity.com to see open positions, employee interviews, and Doximity in the news. I'm a little curious as we dive in, though. I mean, you said that you've played with it a bit before the show. What exactly have you done with Rails 7? Like, how does it look?
First, we have like a smaller app, which I just upgraded before to the beta. And I use encryption feature already in production. So I think it's quite interesting and quite easy to migrate to. And the whole JavaScript stuff, like the whole new stuff around JS bundling, CSS bundling, import maps, it's also interesting. So I tried around with it recently, like after the blog post. So a couple of days ago, I tried a test app and played around with it. So yeah, we can go into it if you want. I can
tell
you
about
my experiences. Yeah. First, I tried the import maps because they're already default in the gem file. If you create a new app, the import maps are activated by default, which is, I think, is an interesting choice. The import maps are like you can skip the whole npm yarn stuff, but still can use like React or other libraries from the internet, from npm. It works like this, that the browser can fetch directly from like a CDN. But you can also download it, and import maps help you manage all the stuff. You can pin specific versions, like you say, I don't know, React 14, and you can use the import maps command line utility to pin to a specific version, and it will download, for example, in production, it will download the JavaScript before, or in development, you directly link to the CDN, and it will use the module, the ES module system to make it all work in theory. I tried using it with a Vue.js, and in this case, it didn't work for me, at least. There was some error. So it maybe depend on which kind of libraries do you use. If I use another library, I think with React, there was not this kind of issue. Maybe also depends on the library, which pulls maybe other libraries, other dependencies. And then somewhere around along the line, there's like some library which accesses something, and you're in the problem space again. So I think, yeah, it's a new default. It maybe makes sense that you can start developing Rails without installing Node.js in some cases, like for the beginners. But I'm not so sure, like if you're growing with your app, it makes sense to stick with import maps, in my opinion. For this use case, I think the JS bundling is more interesting. JS bundling is another package recently released in the Rails GitHub group, and they I think it's more or less a big generator where you can choose, like, I want to use the ES build, rollup, or Webpack. Maybe later on they will add another bundler, but this is a free bundler they ship now, and you can choose, okay, I want to use ES build. You run the generator, it generates a lot of stuff. Like in this time already, again, it will use Yarn or NPM, depend on your system, install the necessary packages and create like a /bin/dev tool for you, which you can later run, which under the hood just uses Foreman to start up your server and your, maybe this tool. Yeah. And then if you use this ES build, which is like a very fast bundler, which does not do a lot of things, but is very fast. I think it was developed by the CEO of Figma, I think. I'm not quite sure, but and then compared to like Webpack, it's much faster and does not use any like dependencies. It's like very easy to install and run. So I think this is great also for beginners. Like, or even for bigger apps, the compile speed is a big, huge advantage. Yeah. So I think this is the JS bundling, but it's, of course, this is only JS bundling. If ES build does not care about CSS so much, so if you want to have some CSS, some Bootstrap, some Tailwind, then you need the CSS bundling gem, which is also now a new official gem. I think it's not in the gem file by default, but you can add it. And then this more or less the same like JS bundling. You have to choose like a framework you use, like Bootstrap or Tailwind. You run a generator, it installs a lot of stuff. It's, for example, in Tailwind's case, it puts Tailwind to the package.json, and then also it appends to the bin/dev, to the Foreman script. So you can run all the three, the server, the ES build, and the Tailwind tool at the same time without caring too much. So there's almost no layer between anymore. So you don't have a Webpacker layer between like your Rails and the JavaScript world. You have to directly use the tools, but the JS bundling and CSS bundling stuff, they help you to install it and maybe wrap it with a very thin layer.
That makes sense. I have to say that the Webpacker layer in between Webpack and Rails has kind of, like, sometimes it's like, wow, this is so convenient. And then sometimes it's like, this is a giant headache. And usually when it becomes a giant headache, it's because it's, okay, well, how do I do this with Webpacker? Because, some of the config between the one and the other is different. And so I can't just go look, how do I do this with Webpack? I have to go look at, how do I do this with Webpacker? And the answer may not be there. And so then I go look at, how do I do it with Webpack? And they'll have an answer there for me. And then I have to kind of go and figure out, okay, that lives over here with Webpacker, and I have to tweak this and this, and then it'll start to work. But sometimes it's not straightforward as to how to take the Stack Overflow for Webpack and apply it to Webpacker. And so I wind up killing a bunch of time. So I'm liking the idea of just saying, hey, pick your bundler. We're going to hook it in so that it runs automatically, which is what I want, right? I want it to hot reload and all that fun stuff that I'm assuming that ES build does for me. And Foreman kind of spins that all together, and Rails knows how to, hey, I'm getting another request, I need to make sure my bundle's up to date. And then the rest of it is, and just use Webpack to build it, or just use Rollup to build it. And then, I'm loving the idea too, that I can just go on Stack Overflow and it says, just do this. And I'll be like, okay. Just to give an example of this. So the other day I was working on a project and I bought a theme off of ThemeForest, and it's a fairly popular admin layout. I had used the older version of it before, it's called Metronic, and I'd gotten it to mostly work in a previous app, but I wanted Metronic 8 because it uses Webpack and stuff, and I don't have to go fuss with a gulp file. But it was, I was getting weird errors every time I tried to add a new piece in. And so, they have a Webpack build that you can just run, but it just didn't play nice with Rails. So anyway, this is making me very excited.
So Stefan, before we came on here, I also noticed you had mentioned Sprockets is kind of going away.
Yeah, this is the last piece is a prop shaft. It's also a new project in the GitHub organization of Rails. This is like Sprockets minus transpiling. Like, it's all the things for Sprockets, like copying stuff to public assets and attaching like the hash. But it does not transpile anything. There's no SAS, there's no like CoffeeScript or anything. So PropShaft, you can add PropShaft to and remove Sprockets. And then you still can use like image tag and the asset helpers. But you get rid of all the transpiling. So they say the source code is also much easier and it's a way forward.
I'll bet.
Do you know offhand if they will use like digest cache keys for the assets?
Yes, I think they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like this, all the We're stuff.
All the same.
Hmm?
That's great.
More or less. Even I think the path, you don't have to change the names, effort path, image tag, or the helpers are still the same. So I didn't try it. I don't know where the limits is. So let's see if it's just a drop-in replacement or there's some other parts which is missing. Yeah. But also interesting, because Sprockets, I don't know if you ever upgraded to the Sprockets 4.
It's painful.
It's not a lot of fun. Even like the, if you have like Uglyfire still in your production RV, I think all of you have ever heard about the Harmony mode or something. So yeah, always in for fun. I think it's great to get rid of the Ruby stuff, which cares about JavaScript so much.
And yeah, I agree.
To the JavaScript.
I think the number one issue deploying Rails to Heroku, which is supposed to be the easiest thing you could possibly do to deploy a Rails app, is always assets. I always see a Stack Overflow question or somebody, you know, opening up an issue like, hey, I can't get this to deploy to Heroku because some weird asset issue,
yeah,
pre-compiling, which maybe won't go away with a lot of these tools. But I know it's a pain point specifically with Sprockets. Or yeah, has been one in the past.
One other thing with that is I feel like Webpacker kind of took us down that road a little bit where you had Ruby managing the JavaScript stuff, but then it was, okay, do I image pack tag this or just image tag this? Or yeah, and it eliminates a lot of that too. I think I saw something in there that was saying that they were eliminating the requirement for Node in some of this stuff.
Yeah, if you don't use JS bundling and you only use import maps and maybe PropShift, then you don't need Node installed. You can run like Rails with a little, yeah. And you can use, in some capacity, you can use like the ecosystem of JavaScript if the ES module stuff works for you.
Gotcha. Because going back to what Valentino was saying about assets, that's another thing that I've seen with some of the Heroku or Heroku-like deploys is, yeah, one of the hangups is, well, sorry, but you have the wrong version of Node or the wrong version of Yarn, right? And so it just kind of goes, and so I quit. And, you know, it's like, well, what the heck?
So, Stefan, just revisiting your article here, and I'm really excited. I don't know about you, but I'm really excited for all these Active Record updates.
Yes.
The API for it is definitely getting some huge must-needed improvements. Do you want to just kind of walk us through what was your favorites of it and kind of some of those highlights?
Yeah, I read about like the encryption stuff. We already maybe we can, I don't know, you want to go into this again? Attribute encryptor,
but I think sure, we can do it for a minute.
Okay. Like
it's been a while, so
I think it's also a very great feature because it's quite easy to use. So you just can like mark specific columns as encrypted, and then Rails will automatically, Active Record will automatically encrypt and decrypt the column when you save or when you read from the database. When you're in the Rails console, you never see anything. Everything just works. Every time you access like the email from the user, it's just, you can see it. But in the database, if you look into the database with an SQL tool or you see the queries, you see there's like some encryption going on. So as a developer, the encryption is transparent. You don't have to care so much about. One can argue, in the last episode, you also argue about if it's useful at all, like what's the use of of encryption if I can access it, if the attacker gets access to the console, so he can or she can already see all the emails or anything. But I say there's still a lot of value for encryption. Like the default thing is encrypted. So every time you access like the database, for example, the database maybe is also on a different host, it's encrypted at rest. Or for example, if you make SQL backups, yeah, which you should do, then the backups is like you can encrypt the backup too, but at least inside, if you forget to encrypt it or whatever, it's also encrypted, all the important stuff. So I think it's a very good feature. It's we migrated just over it. You just have to check if the length of the column is enough because it will store like a JSON-like encryption vector inside it. And then you can also configure it to migrate transparently. So it will check, oh, it's unencrypted. If I save it, I will encrypt it. So half your users could have unencrypted emails and the other one could have already encrypted ones. So you can migrate over it step by step. So I think it's really well made.
And, yeah, one other thing I want to just bring up on this is that, you know, you mentioned it's only encrypted at rest, but it seems like a lot of the breaches that have happened lately are database engine breaches, not application breaches.
I was gonna say I think there's a ton of value in this. I mean, think about, I know from what you've described, Stefan, and looking at this, it makes it really pretty easy. And think about projects where you've started and there's a requirement at the beginning, you know, for encryption at rest, you know, that type of security. And oftentimes it probably isn't needed, but sometimes it is. And I remember just thinking at the beginning, like, just like kind of like, oh goodness, like, you know, having to deal with this. And this just makes it really, really easy. There's always going to be those points of vulnerability. Really, no, the only way to truly secure a system is just to unplug it from the network, right? But then you don't have a very useful system. So I think what Chuck said is spot on, and I'm really excited about this one.
Yeah, me too. As I already said, we're already using it. Also because I'm very eager to another gem which they released. I think it's in the Basecamp organization. It's a console 1984. Do you saw this?
I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah.
I started an initiative at Doximity to take it on eventually, but you know, it requires Rails 7. The console 1984, it locks down the Rails console a little bit more. So you kind of have to declare ahead of time what you're plan to be doing in the console in production, and then it has some restrictions that it does to ask you questions as if you do decide to decrypt stuff from the console. And I think it may even not allow that in some cases. It disables a bunch.
There's like two gems, the console 1984 and Audit 1984, which you can install both and configure both from Basecamp. And they use it to lock down their production console. So they have like some engineers which can, like we all maybe do, like do a Rails production console, which is, I think, is one of the awesome features of Ruby on Rails, yeah, to have a live access to the database and can look around. But of course, you're so powerful, you can like do a lot of things there, yeah. And maybe not every engineer, or maybe you don't trust everybody to make the right thing, or maybe you have some requirements to have an audit log of everything that happens there. So these two gems can help you. They also play together with the encryption. So when you start the gem, or like you connect the console, then maybe you can like also like have to authenticate or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then it will start like an audit with the audit. So you can, everything you type will be like saved for later. and it will automatically decrypt the attribute encrypted stuff for you. Otherwise, it's still invisible for you. Like if you don't activate the feature and just looking around. So there's like two modes. You have to like you can look around, but you cannot see like all the public there's a PIIs, yeah, so the data, so you have to start the audit and then everything gets recorded which you do, but then you can access the real customer data.
I gotcha. So you have kind of an audited god mode.
Yeah, I think it's great, because I think it's one of the really cool features. There's so many, I think all of you have like the kind of like some problems or some colleague or boss ask you, can you give me some info from the production, how many users do this or something. Yeah, you just can hop in. You can give the answer right away. You can like fix bugs right away, which you have data. Uh-huh. I think it's great. But it's, of course, very very dangerous and powerful. So it's great they're having this kind of gem, which I'm really looking forward to try out for one of our apps.
Yeah, I really like having a centralized place for encryption in general. I'd love to have it in Ruby. But, you know, having it in Rails, just to be able to say, hey, throw something at this and encrypt it and be able to customize how that encryption gets handled is pretty incredible.
Yep.
Let's also maybe talk about the load async feature. I think it's also very exciting. I'm also, as a load async, you can like maybe you have a controller action which loads a lot of stuff sequentially. Like you load a lot of users, but you also load a lot of posts, and maybe it's all on a big dashboard. So we have like, I don't know, like 2000 pieces. And in the, like, what we're doing now is like, maybe you load first the users and it will block. So, and load async is a feature where you can like it's at the end of a statement, like, I don't know, like user.all, you can say user.all load async, and the line will execute in the background. Like the Rails will start a thread, I think, or you can configure it. Mm-hmm. And then we'll pick up and try to load the relationship in the background. And later, if it reaches a view and you start accessing like with each or first or whatever, then it will wait until the thread is finished. So this, the advantage is like if you have like a lot of like posts or users below each other, they can all load at the same time. So in theory, you maybe even get like a big speed up, like depend on, of course, your controller action, what stuff you load. I'm also looking forward to try this out. Maybe everybody, all of you maybe know one or two pages in the app where like there's a lot of things going on. Maybe some admin dashboard or some CSV export. I don't know. Like there's a lot of stuff and maybe this can help for speeding up. But of course, I think this you have to try out first because you need the thread pool. And as you mentioned, like Heroku and stuff, if you already use Sidekick or Puma, you have to think about how the thread, like, is there enough workers left or is the RAM is enough or whatever.
This is one of those features where I'm simultaneously excited and terrified for. Like, I just imagine, you know, M plus ones are so common where you have, you go and you iterate through every user and then every user, you're grabbing all the comments on it and it just snowballs. And next thing you know, you got 200 queries on a single page. It's a pretty common problem, right? And to think about those in threads and knowing the underlying thread limits of most servers at this point, I don't know. I see some hard to solve problems coming up.
With great power comes great responsibility.
That's right.
Yep. Yep.
I don't know. I'm hopeful though, because I've been looking forward to, I know I've done, I've used the, I'm trying to think of the name of it now, but there's gems out there that let you do async HTTP requests if you're trying to bundle a bunch at once. But doing it in a place where it's so common, where you have a lot of things that you want resolved eventually, like in a short amount of time, I don't know. I worry. I don't know how you guys feel.
Seems like it's an area of trade-off, right? You just have to be aware of what you're doing, what you're grabbing, why you're grabbing it, how it's going to get loaded. In some cases, fiddle with it. And then, yeah, get an idea of what you're doing with it.
Yeah, I don't think it's like a magic bullet to kill all the performance things, like everything. But maybe it's another thing in the tool belt, which you can, like, maybe you have this kind of specific use case. Mm-hmm. I don't think it helps for N plus one, but maybe like a huge queries, which blocks each other. Like maybe in this case, it can help. But of course, you should measure it before. Because even maybe get slower. Yeah, because all this red stuff is also not for free.
Yeah, and speaking of measuring, I did see Rails from your article is kind of pushing a benchmark measure feature from the Rails module, top level module itself, right?
Yeah, you have like the top level method rails.benchmark, which takes like a label, like a string, which you can see what's going on, and then takes a block, and in the block, you could do some stuff and then you will get a result in the end. Like, I think you can leave this in your system and like keep measuring.
So everybody wrap your load asyncs in a benchmark tag and start reporting what you're getting, you know?
Well, if it's an area of concern for you, you can definitely do that, right?
Yeah, that's pretty neat.
I mean, it is a really powerful capability to have, and there are a good number of use cases that would benefit from this. I think you can't get away from the fact, though, like you have to go start with the application design. Like, is this work that I can do in parallel? And what are the ramifications of that? And then you can't get away from that. Then to the extent that the framework can help you make the underlying thread management easy, then, you know, that's great. But you still have to deal with that overarching design.
Sorry, what did you say? I was canceling my New Relic account.
Maybe hold off just a minute.
Oh, I didn't hit the last red button. Okay.
Yeah. Wait, the last one where they offer you like 50% off. Like,
I know,
go
right?
ahead and just take the 50% off. I hadn't used New Relic until recently. Man, that's a pretty impressive tool.
It is.
It's really, it gives you so much out of the box and very, very helpful.
Well, yeah. I just remember back in the day when they were pretty much free or super cheap to use on Rails apps and stuff, you know, right when they first got started. And then they went all the way to enterprise and it was like, yeah, well, I want to keep both my kidneys, so I'm not going to pay for this. And then they've kind of come back around and you can get a free account again and use a lot of really powerful features on your app before you start paying for it. So I'm a fan. I was not a fan for a while because I was just like, you guys have left us in the dust. But I think they figured it out and realized that there are a lot of folks out here who need a tool like it and are willing to pay for it. They're just not willing to pay what the enterprise is willing to pay for it.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a ton of money in the enterprise market, and you know, all of that ends up being negotiated deals and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you, the market's a lot bigger than that, and they're wise to do that.
Yeah,
great product.
They were the first sponsor of Ruby Rogues. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, okay. I have feels for them. Anyway.
Gotcha. Nice. Hey, can we go back to, I'm a little slow, forgive me. So at the beginning, we were talking about the different front end options. And it is, you know, with the JavaScript bundling, and I'll be honest, I actually really try to avoid all that stuff as much as possible. Like my goal is to stay in Ruby as long as I possibly can until it's no longer like humanly possible to do.
I don't know any other Rubyists that feel that way, by the way. It's just you.
I'm on an island here. I know, right? So reality sets in and there's existing assets, frameworks, all kinds of considerations. But I love that Hotwire is baked in, and mm-hmm. it gives me a path to try to stay in that Ruby world longer. And in a lot of cases, maybe I can just stay there. It did occur to me, though, a minute ago, Chuck, you're talking about, and I've done this too, right? I've grabbed a theme off of some site that I wanted to use. So I don't know how that kind of stuff works. Like, and maybe you all have done more with this than I have, but if I'm in my Ruby world, how could I combine that with getting those nice look and feel I want with my site? Like, I don't know if it messes up that, but I was just curious, Stefan, did you dig into that aspect of, Seven or in any of your work?
The Turbo and Hotwire, you mean this call?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was released in the beginning of the year. When it was released, I immediately tried it out. I only played with it like maybe a couple of hours. I never brought this to production. I think it might be interesting if you start from the beginning, like with the app, like if you start building your app with it in mind.
Mm-hmm.
I had some problems here and there with like the form doesn't work anymore, and here the JavaScript didn't work anymore. So I had to do some work with the existing app to make it ready for the Turbo. So I decided to not do this. But of course, it's like, yeah, in theory, you just drop in the Turbo and the Hotwire, and you will get like different kind of things. Like one is like the Turbo Drive, which is more or less, I think, the old Turbo links. Which means like every time you click on a link or you submit a form, which is new, it would get, it's not like make a new HTTP request with a browser, like a full one, but a background, not a background, like a fetch, like before, like the XHR before, but now it's a fetch, like with a fetch request in the background. And it will, it feels much faster. Even if you measure it, it's usually much faster than like a full page reload. So yeah, this is a Turbo Drive. The other one is a Turbo Streams. Like I think you can use the things together or independently. Like, for example, I tried only using Turbo Drive. It also can work. Like with Turbo Streams, you can trigger front end updates from Rails. It's more or less, from my experience, I think it's the same like we had in, I don't know, Rails 3 or so with the, do you remember like the prototype JS? I don't know if any of you.
Oh, the good old days.
You can say highlight this one or remove this one or add this one. I think in Ruby, I think it's more or less like inspired or like similar to this one, where you like in the Rails controller, for example, you can say, okay, dear JavaScript, please remove the element with the DOM ID of my post and add a new one with the same ID or replace it, for example. And then,
Time is of the essence when identifying and resolving issues in your software. And our friends at Raygun are here to help. Their brand new alerting feature is now available for crash reporting and real user monitoring to make sure you're quickly notified of the errors, crashes, and front-end performance issues that matter most to you and your business. Set thresholds for your alert based on an increase in error count, a spike in load time, or new issues introduced in the latest deployment, along with custom filters that give you even greater control. Assign multiple users to ensure the right team members are notified, with alerts linked directly to the issue in Raygun, taking you to the root cause faster. Never miss another mission-critical issue in your software again. Try Raygun Alerting today and create a world-class issue resolution workflow that gives you and your customer peace of mind. Visit raygun.com to learn more. Their simple usage plans start from as little as $4 per month with unlimited apps and users. That's raygun.com to start your free 14-day trial.
It seems like most use cases would require that level, the streams level of flexibility, rather than the whole page, I think, which Turbo Drive, if I remember the terminology correct, like you're saying. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely some trade-offs, but it's, I guess, you know, we live in the real world. We have existing apps much of the time. So is it a good approach to, if I need to build a new subsystem or set of pages, or is that an opportunity for me to start incrementally shifting over to that approach? Or is it hard to mix and match the different alternatives?
Good question. If you start out with an app, it's easier.
I guess the bigger question I'm getting is, for these different front-end alternatives, do I choose, am I making that choice at the application level or at a more fine-grained?
I think with Turbo, you have to do it. You have to go all in my opinion, because Turbo will take over all the links by default. You have to explicitly say, no, don't take over this one. Let's go to another page. Like, so you have to otherwise it will take over the whole app. I think it's expected to take over the whole app. This is the way it works best, I think.
Yeah. Which is probably reasonable. Yeah. Reasonable assumption.
Yeah. I have giant heart eyes for Stimulus. I love Stimulus. Turbo, I just kind of let Rails turn it on and do its thing. I haven't really fussed with it much. So, you know, I'm pretty happy with that part of the stack. I do like that it's default. And I think Stimulus is lightweight enough to where even if you had a theme or something that was built on Vue or React, I'm sure you can get into weird states, right? Because they both are manipulating the DOM. But Stimulus is pretty straightforward on a lot of this stuff. And I'm kind of imagining that that's pretty nice. I do have to say that, and I don't think that ES Build or any of the approaches that we've talked about so far really solve this. Usually if I'm pulling in a theme, a third-party theme from somebody else, and I'm trying to build it into my Rails app, usually where I get hung up is on older libraries that they're pulling in to give it a certain kind of functionality that aren't yet baked into an ES module, right? And so I have to figure out whether to require it, import it, and then whatever it's setting up or defining or whatever, how do I get that into the right JavaScript variables so that the whatever I include after it can find it? Do I expose it through Webpack or stuff like that? And I don't see that ES Build or any of these other approaches really change that a whole lot, because at the end of the day, you're going to have the same build issue. So you may be able to tie in and, you know, if it has a gulp file or a grunt file or something like that, you can talk it into running it or something and then try and figure it out that way, which is an approach I've taken, but it gets ugly real fast. One thing I did figure out though, is that so I fought this theme for like 3 or 4 days. And then I was looking on a Stack Overflow on how to get, you know, one of the issues I was running into fixed. And it said, well, why didn't you just buy a theme like this one, or this one that do the same things that are built for Rails? And I'm going, oh, that's $30. I'll do that. Right. And so I ditched the old thing. But that said, I mean, sometimes they kind of have the perfect thing for you. So I don't know.
Isn't that the worst feeling? Like you just plunk down a little bit of change. I mean, yeah, it's sure. It's like $30-$40, but now you're on day three of trying to get this thing.
Yeah.
To work,
and there's like, no end in sight. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So
that's when it's time to run over to Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts, get a coffee, and rethink your life.
I know, right?
On the topic of Hotwire, I don't know if anybody else has seen the Reddit post for the time is right for Hotwire. Yeah. But the comments are quite lively. And namely, there has been some great content from Samuel Williams with his version of this live DOM updates that he's been working on with Falcon and Livewire, which I'm just learning about now, but definitely I'll leave a link in the show notes, but it's a pretty great read through the comments section of this. If you're interested in Hotwire and, you know, all this live DOM stuff, definitely check it out.
Yeah, that would be a good pick. I'll let you take that one, because that is a good discussion.
Yep. So I did notice that they had some kind of setup for like posting notes to queries and things like that, which I thought was real nice. It's like, oh, I can see now where this is getting called from. You know, there's like a whole bunch of just really convenient stuff that I saw was coming through. I can't remember what that gem was called.
You mean the marginalia?
Yeah. Like just adding that to the query logs.
Yeah, it's adding you to the SQL query log somehow.
Yeah.
I didn't use it until now, but
I mean, anything that helps me figure out what in the crap is going on is nice, right?
Maybe this helps reducing your bill for a New Relic, so you can do parts of New Relic yourself, which you annotate your query, and later maybe you can see something is taking too long, and you can figure out, oh, cool, it's come from this place.
Yeah, but Darren told me not to cancel yet, so...
Well, now you can go from the $1 million license to the $500K, and then you're...
Oh, there we go. The one kidney price. Instead of an arm and a leg, yeah. It's just a leg.
Sorry, I'm not actually really trying to throw shade on New Relic, because I actually really like it.
I know. we can make fun of them, but yeah.
Rails instrumentation is really great.
Yeah.
You know, if you wanted, you could build an APM pretty easily. I think there's plenty of blog articles out there on it.
Yeah,
I
like, but to be perfectly honest, there are a lot of them out there that aren't that expensive.
Right.
Yeah.
And plus, do you want to use your own Hack Together solution in production?
Yes. Power to the people.
Yeah, those kind of things often start out with, like, all engineers are like way overly optimistic, right? Like, yeah, like, well, instead of paying for this, like, we could build it there ourselves. It won't be that hard. And yeah, then 6 months later, when you're feeling the operational pain,
yeah,
you do that. You generally do that like once in your career. Maybe if you're me, like twice. And then you kind of like give those a second look.
Yeah. My rule of thumb is once you start getting into part-time salary territory, for the cost, then start thinking about whether or not you want to roll your own. Until then, just pay whatever they're asking. That's a good rule of thumb.
It's
less headache. It'll save you money. It'll save you time. Why endure the pain?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Time is the most precious resource that we have, right? So, yeah.
Yep. So what else is in here? I mean, I'm sure they're pushing updates to all kinds of stuff. I mean, we kind of talked through some of the active record stuff.
Yeah, there's really a bunch of stuff. There's also like the stuff to add it to relation, active record relation, where you can, like, I think last time you also in July you already discussed the missing as the invert where, where you can have like a where, and then you can invert the whole thing, which might or might be not cool, depend on. But I think another thing is like you can easily ask if there's a missing relationship. Like, for example, you give me all the posts where there's no attached user, like post where dot missing and then argument user.
Yeah, this was one of the big features that I was looking forward to, is finding missing associations on records very easily.
And they added another one, is inverted, is like relation dot where dot associated. So you can give me all whichever user. So you can like have the, yeah, don't have to type it all every time yourself.
I always have to look that one up. Now I probably won't.
Yep.
Another thing is like excluding. You have like relation dot excluding. So for example, imagine you are the post and you want to have a similar post to myself, to this post itself. You say, inside the post model, you can say like post dot where texts are similar like me dot excluding self. Yeah, you can easily remove myself from the set. So it's quite a handy, convenient method, I think, which you all once or twice have to type ourselves. Yeah, I think at least in my post, I didn't have too much other things, which are, I don't know, for the active record.
Yeah, I will say one thing that I'm kind of excited about, if we're done talking about active record, is the active storage stuff. I mean, some of this stuff's a giant pain in the rear. I also noticed that there was like FFmpeg stuff in here, which is super handy. And I've been, a lot of the side projects that I have relate to audio and video. No shock to anybody, right? You're on podcast network, you're kind of playing in that arena. And so, yeah, the FFmpeg args and duration of bitrate for the audio analyzer and just stuff like that I was just like, sweet. So.
I really like the variants because I don't know, how do you do it? Like usually like you define like, the image you like 300 pixel wide or something in the view or around all the app, and you're not quite sure what kind of variants you have in your app, and maybe like the one is 300 and 200 and 250, and maybe you do some like grayscale or monochrome or something, and now they have like a convenient block which you can pass to, has one attached, and there you can define predefined variants. It's more or less like the old good old paperclip, like then you can say user.avatar thought variant thumb or large or whatever, and then can reference the centralized variants. I think it's okay because I don't know how do it, but before I have like a user model, I have a logo medium method, which like just produces a variant I use all around the app. So I don't always have to think about which kind of size I want to use now. So yeah, I think it's quite convenient to have it there.
Yeah, that's convenient in the sense that, you can stick this in instead of fussing with your, because like Carrier Wave is the same thing, right? Carrier Wave or Paperclip. You had a separate uploader file that did all this stuff, and now you just, you know, you just put it in line in your definition for your model.
Yeah, important to note is maybe that VIPS is now the default processor for image. It's not Image Magic anymore. I think when you're upgrading, it will still be the same, but a new app, maybe you have to install the lib VIPS package in your system. So otherwise, maybe the variants just throw them arrow. Yeah.
Have you tried upgrading an app from 6 to 7?
Yeah, like a smaller app, which is like, which not RC1 is the beta, the last one. Maybe next week I will upgrade it to RC1.
Mm-hmm.
The other apps are still on 6.1.6.0. Looking forward to it. upgrading it.
Is it pretty straightforward? Because like I'm in the middle of doing an app upgrade right now for a client.
And I think if you already like 6.0.6.1, then why don't go the last step? I think the biggest hurdle is Zeitwerk or Zeitwerk. Yeah, in German would say Zeitwerk because it's a company for watches. And Zeitwerk upgrade would bite us because maybe you have some files in the app directory which are not exactly like the folder structure. Like maybe imagine you have like one file with like 3 or 4 classes inside. It's not allowed anymore with Zeitwerk. So you have to like prepare your app for Zeitwerk. If your app is prepared, I think there's also check. You can use the Rails 6.1 and then there's a Zeitwerk check command, Rails Zeitwerk check. And then we will eagerload your app and try if it works or not. I think this is the biggest hurdle.
Okay.
Depend on the size of your models and how many models. And if you always use the right module, then otherwise it will throw an error. Otherwise, go for it. Yeah, if this works. There's not too much breaking stuff. At least for me.
Yeah. I mean, that what you're talking about there too with Zeitwerk, it looks like they don't turn Spring Boot on by default. And I swear, like half of the errors that I run into on an app that is fairly well factored, I'll stop my Rails server, I'll go find Spring Boot and beat it to death with a fire iron, and then I'll come back and turn it back on and it'll work. And so I was super happy to see that that's not running by default anymore, because golly, that thing is such a pain in the butt. And it sounds like Zeitwerk and some of these other things have just made it fast enough to load up and run without it. Anything else we want to jump on here? We've been going for about 50 minutes, so we could go to Pix as well if we want.
I'm looking forward to Action Mailbox. I don't know if anybody else has played with it. I made a small app the other day to receive emails with it, and it worked really, really well.
So what does it do? Just stands up an SMTP server for you?
Not exactly that. I don't really know how it works behind the scenes. I just know it lets you intercept SMTP requests like on an HTTP front.
Oh, okay.
Mail
catcher?
Kind of like mail catcher. I think you configure it with third-party services like SendGrid or something like that as your ingress, and then it just handles the API for them.
So instead of setting up like a Gmail account that it goes and checks periodically, if you do something that does some kind of email reply, it'll just come into the app.
Yeah. Is that
what you're talking about?
Yeah. I mean, it can work with just like PostFix or something like that. But yeah, it's pretty much like a middle app for handling those specific it's a relay. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool. I don't know. I made a small app that just I could forward emails to and it does something with, and it's been really easy to work with.
Cool.
And you can also route emails. For example, you can build it's like a little DSL app mailboxes where you can define rules like this kind of mailbox go to this sub mailbox, which is like a kind of controllery thing.
Yeah.
So like it's routing the mails depending on the from or to. So you can for example, you have a user token and you can pass it into the from, so you know this kind of user replied to me, so I can put it in the data in the table and attach it to the user.
Yeah, Thoughtbot had a library Gridler that I've used before that does pretty much the same things, just not as elaborate. And I'm glad to see it in Rails because it's just so easy to work with.
I'm gonna have to look at that one.
Unfortunately, Action Mailbox was released after I built something similar for our product. We have one product for like applicant tracking system where like applicants also like get emails and answer emails, and I more or less build like this kind of thing by myself, where like I.
So circling back to building things by ourselves.
Yeah.
That's cool. I mean, are you considering using Action Mailbox?
If I build it from scratch, I would use it, yeah. But right. Until now,
you already have something that works, so
yeah.
Very cool.
Depend on your app. Yeah, if depend on the app, usually you also want to like listen for like bounces and complaints, mm-hmm. and you have to process this kind of stuff also. I've wrangled a lot of emails and found a lot of, I don't know, like out of office stuff. And there's so many stuff in email.
Yeah, the spec for mail seems to be a lot bigger than you might imagine.
Well, it's another one of those things. It's like the API for JavaScript, right? They want it to be completely backward compatible. And so there's a bunch of crud in there that nobody really ought to do, but people use it anyway because it's there. And so it's got this huge surface area. And it seems like SMTP is the same thing, right? If you've got a really, really old server, they want it to still sort of work. And so,
I mean, you're talking about a technology that's, what, 40, 50 years old. So it's got a little bit of baggage. But yeah, it's crazy how often it's still used. And it's true. And even with, this is a little bit of a tangent, but when you're talking about content creation and growing an audience and sales pipelines and things like that, you know, what's mm-hmm. the number one thing? Like if you go across, like build up that email list, it all comes back to email. It's so interesting.
Yep.
So good on Rails for adding more mail features instead of just, you know, like adding a metaverse library or a...
Well, to be fair, I think a lot of this stuff comes out of them working on things like Hey and Boot Basecamp and stuff, right? And it's, we really needed this and we kind of limped along with using third-party stuff or other Ruby or Rails gems. And eventually, to get what we wanted, we just built it ourselves. And then we realized that, hey, the rest of you can use it too. So,
hey folks, it's Charles Max Wood, and I just wanted to jump on real quick and let you know that I am putting together a podcasting course. I get asked all the time. I've been coaching people for the last 6 months. How do you start a podcast? How do you put it together? What do I need in order to get it going? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I've put together the curriculum, and I did it through coaching a whole bunch of people, and now I want to share it with you. You can go check out the course. It's actually going to be a masterclass. It's going to be a 4-week masterclass where I actually walk you through the entire process of launching a terrific sounding podcast and putting together content that people want to listen to. And you can find it at podcastbootcamp.io.
All right. Well, I am going to push us into picks. Darren, why don't you start us off with picks?
Yeah, sure. So we talked earlier about my desire to stay in the Ruby world. So I've gotten interested in game dev a little bit lately. And so I can give you a short take on what I found. 2D gaming, it's great. If you are using Ruby, of course, there's always the challenge of the person who's going to use your app needs to have a runtime installed. So that makes things a little bit more fun. Dragon Ruby solves that problem by providing an easy way to deploy to mobile, mm-hmm. Mac, Windows, web. But I'm really interested in 3D as well. And so that's where really all of these solutions seem to fall short. In terms of performance, I've had difficulty getting Dragon Ruby to do much in 3D at any kind of efficiency. The frames per second is pretty bad. I can get a much higher frames per second using Ruby Gosu, but then how am I going to distribute my game? So I decided, okay, well, maybe I'm at the point where 3D, yeah, maybe I do need to step out a bit. So I looked at the different engines. I tried Unity, Unreal. They both seem very heavyweight, and my Mac isn't that old. It's like 2 years old. So I ended up kind of playing around with Godot. It is an open source gaming engine. It's extremely powerful. It's got a huge user community, and it's kind of an interesting perspective. So I'm seeing all of the things that in the Ruby world we don't have. I'm actually thinking about how after playing around with this, I can kind of port back some of these concepts and features to the Ruby world. But I'm making some of my first little small games right now, which hopefully I'll be able to share with folks soon. And it's been a lot of fun. It's been interesting. But that's kind of what my pick is. There's some actually really cool samples too. So out of the box, you can start out with a first person shooter type scenario and walk through a 3D world. So pretty wild stuff. There's a lot of amazing tools that are out there in open source, and it's because of the licensing open source, your game is entirely free. Now, with that said, the commercial engines, you don't actually have to pay them money in most cases until you're selling hundreds of thousands of copies, which I probably don't have to worry about for just a little bit. But nonetheless, the game's all yours. So that is my pick for today.
Very cool. Valentino, what are your picks?
So how could I not choose that Reddit article? Mostly the comments section of the Time is Right for Hotwire. There's some just great content in there on issues that Rails has with streaming data, Hotwire, Livewire, Falcon, all concurrency related stuff to Rails and the front end. Definitely recommend reading through a lot of that great stuff. And my other pick, I came across this thing called Architecture Decision Records, and there is a command line tool that lets you interact with them. It's a really interesting topic I'm hoping to learn more about. But if you ever wonder why certain architecture decisions are made, the history of them, it seems like a great tool to have in your toolbox. That's it for me.
Awesome. All right. Here, I've got a whole bunch, so I'm just going to go for it. The first pick that I have is I've been picking board games. One of the ones that's a favorite around here is Marvel Legendary. Now it's got like 24 expansions to it, right? So you get all kinds of Marvel heroes. Some you've probably heard of, some you probably haven't. Some you probably didn't even know were Marvel heroes, but you have heard of. Like Howard the Duck. I didn't know he was a Marvel. Anyway. Yeah. So anyway, it's a super fun game. We've really, really enjoyed it. And yeah, I mean, it's a deck building game. So you mostly play with the cards and, you know, you play them out on the game board. A few things I'm going to throw out, though, is one is we picked up a game mat to replace the game board, and it has held up way better than the game board has. So if you're going to play it a lot, that's one thing I recommend. It also has spots because as you buy some of the expansions, they have types of cards that don't have a place on the board, but the game mats were made after them. And so they've got spots for all that stuff. And so that's been terrific. But yeah. Super fun game. I enjoyed it to the point where I actually wrote a React Native app to help you kind of pick heroes. So anyway, really, really enjoy it. And yeah, your mission is to defeat the mastermind before they complete their scheme. And some of them are hard and some of them are not. And some of them, it depends on what heroes you have. So anyway, so I'm going to pick that. I am working on some stuff with top end devs, but I have figured out that there are one or two things that I need to get together before I full-on launch. And so I'm probably going to launch a little later than I wanted to, but it is still coming early next year. In the meantime, one thing that I'd like to do to connect with people is I'm going to give you a phone number you can text and I'll text you back. Now, if you try and call the number, I don't get voicemails and it doesn't ring anywhere. But if you text me on this number, I will text you back. And the phone number is 801-877-3287. And you'll have to confirm because there are, when you kind of do this mass outreach kind of thing, they want to make sure that I'm not like reaching out to little kids or something, right? So you have to confirm that you're over 18. And it only works in the US. But I would love to be texting back and forth with you, seeing what you're working on, seeing what we can pull together for you. And so anyway, go ahead and text that number. I'm probably going to put it on the website as well, just so that you can join in. But I'm going to pick that. I should also have the Slack server up so you can get on and get to know each other as well. And I'm going to be doing that pretty soon. So those are kind of the next couple of things that I'm working on beyond some of the podcast stuff, just to move some of the podcast stuff off my plate. And then the last picks I have, I'm going to pick some books. And then I'm going to do one other just kind of fun pick. So the books are, I've been listening to the books on Audible and I've just kind of been rotating these lately. So, three of them are by Russell Brunson. It's .com Secrets, which teaches you how to build sales funnels, Expert Secrets, which is how you, you know, kind of, build products and a value ladder and things like that. And then Traffic Secrets, which is how you get people to come into your funnels. And then the other book that I've been listening to is Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And that one is really just kind of a roadmap for success. And as I've been really kind of figuring out, okay, top end devs, you know, how do we help people do the four or five things on a regular basis that are going to get them where they want to go? You know, things like learning something new every day, meeting somebody new every week, committing code every week, you know, just stuff like that. It's okay. Well, I've been, the success principles in this book have really kind of dovetailed with what I've been thinking about as far as how to help people be successful. So I'm going to pick that book as well. And then the last one's just kind of for fun is The Wheel of Time. It's the series on Amazon Prime. I am going to say that when I talk to people about it and I find out that they've read the books, usually it's something like, are you enjoying the series? And does it drive you crazy, all the stuff they changed in the series from the books? But the flip side is that it's a really well done series so far. They've just deviated in some pretty spectacular ways from the story in the book. So anyway, that's kind of my take on that. So if you've read the books, you'll have to get over that. And if you haven't read the books, my wife has been loving the series. She hasn't read the books at all. So anyway, those are my picks. Stefan, what are your picks?
I have one gem I want to pick. I don't know if it's picked before, but it's such a lifesaver. It's IATN tasks. Maybe for you American, it's not a big problem. Always everything is English, but we Europeans usually like all the apps. Yeah, you start with your local language and then you add English. So having an internationalized app is a big requirement. And if you use a Rails system with the locals and .yaml files, it can get pretty messy after a while. And IATN task is a really, really great tool set, which helps you to manage it. You can sort the keys. You can sync between the languages. You can auto Google translate the whole language in like, it's so fast. It's unbelievable because it just uses the API, and the Google Translate API is very cheap. Like, for example, I used it to translate like 3000 strings. It took like 2 seconds. Boom, done. Yeah. One language added. And it can sync, like it will test if all the keys are used. Like it will scan all your views. It will scan your models wherever you use a helper. It will find out which keys are not used anymore. It can auto delete it. It's such a lifesaver to like, yeah, if you grow, have a growing internationalization. Yeah, this is my pick. Another one which I recently come upon is like the Trestle admin interface. It's like it's also like interface admin, like active admin, for example. Mm-hmm. like you put it in and you have like a kind of DSL for defining your admin pages. It's like very similar to like active admin, but I so enjoy it. It has so many features. It's like almost nobody uses it or has heard about it, but you can achieve so much. There's also like a plugin system. You have like a Sidekick plugin, can have your Sidekick dashboard inside your active admin. It uses a Bootstrap theme, so it's more easily to add your own stuff if you're already familiar with Bootstrap. It has much less dependencies than active admin, so if you upgrade your Rails, it's easier because it only uses Caminary, not any like inherited resources or anything. So I'm really enjoying it. It's just like the documentation is not so good, but if you find the issues or like inside the code, you will find there's so much stuff already working, so many features. Yeah, this is my pick.
Awesome. And if people want to connect with you online, where do they find you?
Yeah, they can find my Twitter, which is like a long German name, at Stefan Wienert, or like they can shoot me an email on my website. They find the email like stefanwienert.de. I think it's in the show notes.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap up here. Until next time, folks, Max out.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.